The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Honored to be on their show earlier today. Danny and Matt do an excellent job interviewing people.
Afternoons on the Score.
Maris, a strikeout with the bases loaded to end the threat. Cubs win. And Cubs win the series.
Well, Maris comes in, throws strikes, finishes it with the splitter. That's enough. That'll do it. Maybe a little closer than needed or wanted, but the job is done.
Well, go Cubs, go! As they fly the flag.
Hey, man, a day on which both Hector Neris and Hayden Wesneski. Hayden Wesneski looked
really good.
In a Cubs win, 5-0 over the Angels. And those highlights were from the Marquee Sports Network, where they had the all-female broadcast yesterday. As we welcome you back into the Parkinson Spiegel Show, along with Anthony Herron, I am Mark Grody. And later on today, we are going to be giving away a pair of tickets to see Vampire Weekend. They are going to be here in the city of Chicago on July 26th. So later on, when you hear this... a fun, delightful ditty right there. You will be prompted to
call the contest line.
Call the contest line. Should I give the contest line number right now,
yeah.
Shane?
Yeah, go for it.
Because we're not giving them away right now. But the contest line number is 312-540-0670. Again, 312-540-0670. When you hear that little ditty right there.
Catchy little riff.
Yeah, catchy little riff.
It's recognizable. Right, I'd say. It's nice.
It's one of the most recognizable guitar riffs of all time.
Oh,
without a doubt.
Seems like a drastic overstatement. Who would think something like that?
I think anyone would. I think that's one of those things that you're probably not thinking about often, but every single person has
true.
Heard that guitar riff before.
So how are you characterizing it, Jake?
One of the most popular. Recognizable guitar openings or riffs of all time.
It is very familiar sounding, and I guess I've never really thought of it in terms of it being a classic riff, because it's just a little bit too light, I guess it would be a little bit too ear candy.
You want something a little more bite to it, a little grit,
I guess,
to your riffs.
And it feels like it's everywhere, and you don't know where, like, how many people could.
Grody likes grit. You like a good
gritty. I do like grit, but I actually, as I said when we're talking, I do like Vampire Weekend. Like, I don't need grit all the time.
Okay.
You know, it's just whatever I'm feeling, whatever emotions are in me is the type of music that I want to hear. And a lot of times it's that grunge stuff, but I like this too.
I feel like, I mean, it's kind of a subjective way, I guess, to frame it. So when you saw one of the most recognizable guitar riffs,
doesn't mean
of
it's
all
good.
Time,
doesn't mean it's good.
Well, that's fair too.
And I'm not saying that everyone could name the song.
Sure,
but
I couldn't name the song, but I know
heard
that riff. Right, I've heard it
for two reasons. I think Step Brothers, obviously, one of the greatest openings of any comedic movie. I think when the two Step Brothers meet each other, but
that
then also,
right.
It's. It sits atop like your iTunes on your phone. So you plug your phone in, and if you don't have Spotify open or something, it's the first thing that plays, because when that phone goes on Bluetooth in a car, it plays the first track available.
Oh.
So that is the first track.
For mine, it's always U2 for some reason. I don't know why. Like, my phone just starts playing U2 out of nowhere. Like, Bono has invaded my smartphone. I don't know how or why.
That's not terrible.
But yeah, maybe a hot take. But I think it's one of the most recognizable.
Are you talking
guitar
like
riffs
top
of all time?
10, top 100, top 1,000.
Yeah, top 10 most recognizable.
I will say.
And Shane falls on the concrete.
Yeah,
no, I didn't, George.
Some road burns. there's a little bit of, I don't know, that's a little bit lofty.
I would be willing to bet that most people driving right now have heard that song.
Exactly.
Probably couldn't tell you what it is, though, honestly, but definitely have heard that. And then they hear, Vampire Weekend. Okay, I think I've heard of Vampire Weekend. That's the way Vampire Weekend. And just, they're subtle. They just kind of hang out, popular, but they're not trying to push their way to the front of the line. You know,
I think
what, I mean?
What you're saying is accurate, but I am curious then. Are you saying you agree with Shane that it's one of the top 10 guitar riffs of all
time? I don't know, but I think what you're doing is you're trying to say, like, one of the greatest, like, it's a classic rock riff. I don't think that's what Shane is saying.
No, I'm not
saying
that.
And I do agree with what I think Shane is saying, and that is that it's just something. It's very familiar. We all know it. I don't even know if I like the riff, honestly. Mm-hmm. I can't. Of course, I've heard of it, and it might be one of the most recognizable ones ever.
I'll say this, and then we can move on to Cubs. I'm saying it's like 98% of people that have heard songs have heard that song, heard that opening guitar riff.
Do we know yet? Is Danny Parkins familiar with that riff? Because he's somebody who kind of hasn't heard songs, right?
No, I don't think
so. No, Step Brothers, though. Step Brothers, right? Step Brothers, yeah. I would think.
Yeah. That's Danny true. Has heard it.
Okay.
Yeah.
From that, because I've probably heard it from that movie, too. But I mean, yeah, like, bow, 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 bow. I think of that to me, top 10
couldn't even
guitar
recognize that
riffs of all time.
I have no idea what that riff was.
Stick to singing, kid.
Let's get, like, when you hear certain guitar riffs, you know exactly what it is.
No, you're right. We could put together a much better list of guitar riffs
and more recognizable ones.
I don't know about that.
See, you're nitpicking on the word recognizable.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to make it fit. It's definitely not one of the greatest, but even recognizable.
We're not saying that. It's one of the greatest.
Yeah, and that's not, I'm even just disagreeing with the recognizable aspect of it. I think there's a good 50 to 100 that would be more recognized.
Hey, fellas, real quick, let's go to our list. Let's see how we did.
Ooh, let's go.
All right.
Is that the next category?
Well, no, I think that you...
What day do they play categories?
You can definitely bring us your list, I guess. I heard you listing Bulls players the other day. I heard you listing your 10 favorite Bulls of all... You're all listing stuff lately.
It is list season.
Yeah, so you go ahead and list some of that. The problem that still exists with the Cubs, despite what felt like some recent success, including yesterday's win, the 5-0 win over the Angels, the problem with the Cubs is I still don't think this team is capable of making a run. And I understand it. I know where they are right now in the wild card, and they're still within shooting distance, higher degree of difficulty. And they could get there if they were to put a run together. But I am every series, and I was saying this last week, but I got more proof of it. Like, and I will begin. I'm going to go back to the Thursday game, the Cubs and Phillies. Cubs with a 10-2 win over the Phillies. That's the 2-3-run homer day for Ian Happ, where the skies open and twice the Cubs have two men on and nobody out, and Ian Happ comes up and cleans the bases. On Friday, this just past Friday, this is Steele's second start since he lost his mind in the dugout. In a good way, he lost his mind. Cubs beat the Angels 5-1. Justin Steele, who is, despite Shota Imanaga going to the All-Star game, that's your best starter. That is absolutely, Justin Steele is your best starter right now. He is retaken, I don't know if people have noticed or not, but as good
as...
He looks like Justin Steele again, and not that Shota's been bad. We know that he's had some clunkers, but I don't know if anybody's noticed or not, but Justin Steele is the ace of this staff. He did ace stuff that day. And then, so this is what's starting to take place in my head. Oh, they're starting to make a run. These are good wins. And then Saturday loss, there it is. There it is. The Saturday loss to the Angels, 7-0, 7-0. Kyle Hendricks hurts his back in that game. Colton Brewer, punches a wall and breaks his hand. Whatever. I don't really care about that stuff. It's just to kind of put a finer point on what they can't make a run. You're not supposed to lose to the Angels in this circumstance. So that game, of all the good that has happened, I'm circling Saturday still. I hate that I'm doing it, but that loss, and then they win. Like, yes, they won the series. They win again yesterday over the Angels 5-0, but guess where they're going today? Well, they're off today. They're going to Baltimore tomorrow. You had to sweep that series and show some sign of life that you are capable of making a run. So that's where I am with the Cubs, that they're not a team that's capable of making a run now.
Until further notice, that's 100% accurate. I mean, there's a lot that they need to prove in sustainability, because it's nice to have a one-off where you score 10 runs and you go back-to-back days, 10 runs in 5 runs, 15 runs in 2 days. How marvelous was that from the Cubs offense? It just seemed so dormant, so moribund for so much of the season. Then you get shut out, and you put 5 on the board. But the entire series as a whole, taking 2 out of 3 against a banged-up and a lowly Angels team, it's hard to take a lot of hope right now, especially knowing the clock that ticks.
Yeah.
For the Cubs, between the All-Star break and the trade deadline and the decisions that have to be made, you got to see a lot more to really feel like it makes sense. It's one thing to think that the organization should spend money. But when you factor in the big picture of that, if it doesn't work out this season, which it obviously hasn't worked out so far, then you still go into next year wanting to feel like the Cubs are in the midst of some window they can try to see something. Mm. So a Cody Bellinger type, does making a move for Bellinger to have the opportunity to get something for him that enhances what the next few years could look like, that probably, at least as we sit here today on whatever it is, what is it, July 8th? As we sit here on July 8th, that probably makes more sense as of today than it would to think that the Cubs should begin to push more chips into this thing to acquire a big bat and acquire some additional relievers. The production of the current roster hasn't earned that investment up to this point.
That's true, and you use words like window and core. I think that this year, for me anyway, it's put a little confusion into what the window is and what the core is and what is the core. I talked about this a little bit with Danny the last time I filled in here on the on the Parkins and Spiegel show. Like, who from this group that with the Cubs right now, this core that we know of, the core being, you know, Dansby Swanson and Suzuki, that was in theory he was part of the core. PCA slash Bellinger, I suppose. I don't look at Michael Bush as part of the core. Do you?
No, not as of yet. I mean, you want guys who are able to achieve it at a level, to produce at a level and sustain that, because, you know, Michael Bush shows a lot of potential, but is he a part of a championship core, a World Series core? I don't view him as that as of yet, and I don't know how many of the guys beyond several starting pitchers. Like, that's the thing. If they did find their way into the wild card, there's enough starting pitching on this team where you could see them making some noise when you get there. But I think to your point is more specifically about not having any faith the Cubs can even make that run. And you can't wait until the offseason for the front office to determine whether or not we should have gone all in or not. There are decisions that have to be made in the weeks to come. And so if you're thinking that it's time to go all in, it's time to push some more chips into this thing, it's time to acquire some relievers and a bigger bat, there's a lot of folks who were very loud in that sort of in that chorus over the offseason. I wasn't one of them because I didn't think this was a division that could get away from the Cubs. I didn't see this as a division with the Cubs as they were constructed. They were going to be able to separate themselves by double-digit games with the Cubs being in last place. So I actually liked the patient approach to continue to stack a few pieces, put this lineup in a more formidable position than they were, and then have money to spend at the trade deadline because you were going to be right there in the midst of the division. They're barely sniffing the wild card right now. So that's a position I didn't expect the Cubs to be in. Not because I thought the roster that had been set up was really that great. I just thought this division was not going to be able to separate themselves like they have.
Yeah, we all forgot about the Brewers and the possibility that they may actually be a good team, and they've been able to sustain well beyond the point where people thought that they would. I mean, it's the truth. It does suck. I mean, you brought it up. Like, that, like, wasting good pitching. That's painful.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It insults my baseball sensibilities when you, and look, I know Shota, there's definitely a normalizing.
Showtime, man.
Well, no, but there's a normalizing that's going on with Shota. We're in the midst of it. You know what I mean? Like, this
I'm here for it, though.
This
you
is
know,
the he's touch. Not, the ERA
not
is.
Superman, but he's still so fun.
He's still a lot of fun every time he takes him out. He is, and I still think that he is good. So, just to further the point, where you have Shota and you have Justin Steele and you have had Javier Assad, who is might be back actually on this road trip. They have missed Javier Assad. Jameson Taillon, who I've come to learn to know what to expect out of him, and that he's probably not going to dominate much, and he may disappoint sometimes.
And
but
what if Ben Brown's neck starts working again?
There you go.
You may even get him back.
But that's another great example. They have had all these guys who have put in good performances at one point in time. And we're just talking about Hayden Wesneski. And look, it's been a rough year for Wesneski, just giving up the amount of big home runs that he's given up this year. But I got
keeps it in the ballpark. It hadn't been bad.
But he's been
keeping it in the ballpark has been an issue.
Really bad at keeping the ball in the ballpark this year, and just giving up some. Like, I'd have to go back and look, but a lot of them were of consequence, and they probably always are of consequence. But Wesneski yesterday, 6 1/3 shutout, allowed one hit, struck out two, walked one. 86 pitches yesterday. He was everything yesterday. And struck out 18 in a row. Retired 18 in a row at one point in the game. So it was good to see that, but it's just symbolic of, again, and yesterday was nice. They won the game. A perfect game for the Cubs. It's kind of what it is. Hey, Dansby Swanson got a hit. You know, he'd been 0-for-23 going into yesterday and got a line drive hit in his first at bat. I think he was retired the rest of the day. But, I mean, there's just so much that has gone on with the Cubs. While you have to factor in, yes, there have been severe – they began the season without Justin Steele this year, without Jameson Taillon. So there were some built-in excuses, but there's just too many players who, when given a chance, or regulars, have not played well. And Dansby Swanson was the guy that, you know, I circled as number one right now in terms of that.
The offense as a whole, and just seeing, and it, what's kind of confounded me a little bit is because I feel like the way the offense is structured, the way the lineup is structured, seems like it should make sense. Yes, another bopper would really be useful, and there's no doubt about that at this depth into the season. But even in the offseason coming in, thinking, you know what, by comparison to the broken offense of 5 to 7 years ago and everything like that coming out of the World Series window, where it was just kind of all big swingers. It's like, who's your contact guy? That was my big issue there, my big sort of question about the way it used to go with those guys. So now you've gone through the teardown and starting to build this thing back up. And you have guys with a more professional plate approach, I suppose would be the way I would say that, where you know they should be able to put the stick on the ball, get it in play, and yes, have enough power to drive it out of the park. And just top to bottom, it's been great to see Ian Happ have some stretches here where he's been able to power the lineup to a certain extent. I was debating Ian Happ with Spiegs earlier in the season when he first got sat down for those back-to-back games and just thinking, like, well, why would you do that to Ian Happ? There's a lot of other problems here and issues. And I kind of feel like since then, Ian Happ has been shoving it in Spiegs' face over and over again. Like, take that, Spiegs, every time he hits a bomb.
So you said it was cool that he sat for a couple days and Spiegs
I didn't dig it. No, Spiegs was very pro-sit Happ, you know, much in the corner.
So he wins then,
right? Ian Happ looks a lot better lately.
I know, because he sat. Sat.
You think it's because he sat?
Yes.
Okay. I would think Ian Happ probably sees it
as. You had an issue with Spiegs, and I'm like, wait a minute. It's obviously what the guy needed because he's taken off. So I'm sorry, man. Yeah. It'd be fun to gang up on Spiegs right now. But I got to tell you, Spiegs was absolutely right about that. It's funny, like, think about Ian Happ. When he came up with the Cubs, and he was really good at first, and then he hit a really bad skid, and there was a point where he was sent back down.
Remember the whole leadoff things? Like, we got to find somewhere to put this guy in the lineup.
Well,
let's try him at leadoff in that first at-bat. They did it with Happ once, too, where the first at-bat of spring training 1 year, Ian Happ hit the ball a mile.
No, that's the first game of the season against the Marlins.
Yeah,
we
thought we had our answer at leadoff. There you go. Who needs Dexter Fowler now? There's Ian Happ hitting it a mile.
That was 2018, first game of the year, and he blasted off. But there was a time during the Ian Happ's early days where he was sent back to the minors, and he was not happy about it at all. And I thought, and I think it maybe was on one of his appearances here on The Score within the last couple of years, where I think somebody asked him, or maybe it was a ballpark interview, hey, you know, now that you look back on what has gone down, that you've had success since coming back up, do you think it was worthwhile to be sent down to the minors? And he said yes. He said no, that he was still kind of resented.
Understandably
being
so.
He wasn't going to play along with that particular idea.
I feel like it can be a little confirmation bias, because we'll never know for sure either way. Is he better now because he got sat down for a couple of games? Was he better back then because he got sent down to the minors? I think for a younger baseball player where Ian Happ was at that time, sending him to the minors, letting him get at bats against minor league level competition as opposed to at the major league level where he can figure some things out and then come back to the majors and be more prepared. I think that makes a lot of sense for a younger guy. It was so early in the season at that point. What was it, like early May or early to mid-May, something like that, when Happ got sat down while he was cold and while the entire offense was cold. So I just felt like, you know, wasn't the end of the world, two games, but, you know, Spiegs, if I'm remembering correctly, Spiegs was like, cut him. No, he wasn't saying cut him, but he was thinking maybe a little more extended time to see Ian Happ down. I just felt like it singled Ian Happ out in a way that was unnecessary, and I felt like he was likely to recover from that period anyway. So I'm of the belief Ian Happ was going to begin hitting like Ian Happ.
Regardless. Okay.
I will never know because he's hitting more like Ian Happ.
So zero credit to Craig Counsell.
None.
He deserves zero credit.
None.
Spiegel is wrong. The whole thing. 3-1-2. The Cubs are toast. They're not in the wild card chase. True, they're only 5.5 games back, but it might as well be 25.5 games back. There are, in capital letters, 7 teams ahead of them for the last playoff spot. Ain't happening. Toast. I hate to say it, but that's the way things are trending right now. That if they're not capable of putting a run together, how is any of that easy to overcome? He's right. That's a complicated way to go. Oh, not to mention the fact that you have to get red hot, and the Cubs have just showed no signs of getting to that point.
You think they can make a run?
Okay.
No, but I'm not ready to completely count them out yet, but I'm not betting on them making a run. I'm more concerned by the fact that the defense hasn't been what's expected. It'd be one thing if you had excellent starting pitching and amazing defense and so many other aspects of the team. You weren't making outs on the base pass. There's so much that's not in sync with how the Cubs are operating. And in addition to that, they're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. So all those aspects, I mean, to highlight the bullpen and to highlight the offense, especially the power numbers, I think those are the two most glaring things. But there is so much that's not really going right that hasn't been exceptional, especially the defense. Like, you should have been able to count on defense with this team. And that, to me, as far as what the expectations were and where the actual performance is, that's the widest chasm out of anything. The way they've defended versus expectations, that's been the most disappointing part about the Cubs.
It shouldn't feel like a relief either when a guy hits a 3-run homer.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like that day where Ian Happ hit the 2 3-run homers. Like, the second one, I was just delirious.
Take that, Speaks.
Wow.
That's what I was yelling. Take that, Speaks.
Two of those. When we return, let's talk more baseball. Cubs and Sox both, believe it or not, have all-stars, and we will discuss those. Also, a pretty bad ending for the White Sox yesterday in their game. We're going to talk about it all. That is Big Ant Heron just having a good old time over
riffing
here.
Away, man.
And I'm Mark Grody. It's the Parkinson Spiegel Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Fans, they don't like him.
Afternoons on the Score.
Another 0-2. And Crochet's got that good.
Mm. It's actually bad.
That's a
truth. Yeah, the White Sox had a rough ending to yesterday's game. We welcome you back into Parkinson Spiegel, along with Anthony Heron, Big Ant Heron. I am Mark Grody. We are here with you until 6 o'clock tonight, and then we'll be with you again. We will be with you for the full ride tomorrow as well. But headline from the Sox game, Jake Berger walk-off 3-run homer in the ninth inning against Michael Kopech. Also, not to mention Josh Bell, the big lefty, the former Pirate, standing up there all big and tall in the box, and he drills one to left field. Tommy Pham is there. It looks like Tommy Pham is going to make the catch, and then he didn't have the ball, and that was it. Tie game. So just enough, like, of the things that we do pay attention to on the White Sox, I would say that Kopech is one of them, and to see him continue to have these loud losses and these occurrences that go on when he gets in the game. He had another balk where he got his spike stuck again, which had happened a couple of weeks ago as well. So it's worth noting the Berger hit, first of all, and Berger's not been great with Miami, so Sox fans don't have to feel as terrorized as maybe they would if this Berger trade really had worked out well for the Marlins, and maybe it still will. He has not had a great year, but there he was, stinging you, right in the end of the game. Just a walk-off, no doubt about it, blast off of Michael Kopech to win the game.
After the game, Berger ends up saying, "Stepping into the box, I felt it was storybook because of my history with the Sox.
Yeah, it was.
I was fortunate to get a pitch that I could do something with. Obviously a cool moment, but I wish nothing but the best for the Sox. Anytime you hit a walk-off home run, You're going to remember that. And a lot of guys, I guess, may try to sort of play it off a little bit and just kind of make it seem like, it's not a big deal. It's just another at bat, or, you know, baseball. You know, sometimes they fall in, sometimes they don't. But it's a huge deal when your former team, who made the decision to move on from you, didn't want you to be a part of their future. And now here you are with an opportunity to continue to just sort of mush their face in the mud. And there's the burger just mushing the Sox face in the mud.
Yeah, in the mud.
Yet again.
Right, yeah. Right there in the mud.
Mm-hmm.
That is what his whole, like, Jake Berger's career has all been sort of tragically loud, too. I mean, like, that's a storied moment for him.
Right.
I thought the storied moment was that hitting a home run or actually doing anything with the White Sox to begin with after having had awful injuries where it didn't look like his career was ever going to take off. And now he has this bad year in Miami. But he gets a moment. He gets another moment to, as you said, to stick it to the White Sox and really just make it even more torturous for White Sox fans. Like, I don't know how many people are still actually watching or listening to White Sox baseball at this point. But no, they do. They do.
Yeah.
There are people that have not completely been destroyed by the franchise that are watching. But then I think about games like that, where it's like a few more people fall off the boat, I think.
You could make the case that there are two uber-talented pitchers for the White Sox that you can make the case they should sit both of them down for the opportunity to trade them before something goes horribly wrong. With Michael Kopech, if you want him to be able to maintain any semblance of trade value, then maybe you stop running him out there as the closer. And yeah, they can see that triple-digit heat, but they also see the ball going the other direction at a really high velocity over and over again at the end of games. So a lot of people are still going to be very enamored with his physical gifts, with that arm that he can take to the mound every time out. But if you keep seeing these awful results, then it does seem to diminish his trade value. Then, of course, on the other end of the spectrum, you have Garrett Crochet, because you have the opportunity to trade him, to move on from that. But if you keep trotting him out there, now the question about his longevity for this season, he's just continuing to go out there and pitch more than he's ever pitched in any individual season at any other point in his baseball life. So one, do you put him at risk before you're actually going to trade him away? And also, is the team that he potentially goes to going to be in a position where they have to make a decision about how they'll utilize him, because he has already maximized his output? He's already exceeded the output that he's had at any other point in his baseball life.
You've done
life.
Way more than anybody ever expected. And quite frankly, this is why he's so tradable. Is he ever going to get back to that point again? None of us knows.
Yeah.
Like, I'm as big of a fan of Garrett Crochet as there is. I love that he kind of surprised everybody this year and became the opening day starter for the White Sox. But do we really think that this is him? Is he really on this trajectory? I mean, it's kind of hard to believe that he is that guy. I think that's even like, and I don't want him to come back to the mean or anything like that, but you know, his last start, 4 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, struck out 5, 3 walks, 93 pitches over 4 innings in that last start. So kind of to your point of, let's not expose if we don't have to, but we still do have to wait until, or it would appear that they're going to wait until the trade deadline to do anything with him if they do. But I'm all over the board on Crochet.
Okay.
Because
as far as the keep him or trade
absolutely,
him aspect
of it? Absolutely. Because my initial instinct was keep him. He's still young enough. He's still under contract for a couple more years. This is your guy. You drafted him. You made the decision. And there is credit to be given to the White Sox this year for making the decision to make Garrett Crochet a starting pitcher this year. Like all of that 100% exists. I just don't know if he's going to be able to get back to that in future years, where he's the true ace of the staff, and you could probably get quite a bit for him if you were to deal him. But he's like, it's tantalizing, the idea of keeping him and continuing to have him be yours.
That's
what he
is. Even titillating.
Really?
I mean, yeah, that's just how I view it.
Strong.
You know, my perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I can't speak for you, obviously, but both are probably accurate.
I think
For Crochet, if the White Sox don't get anything for him, like I'm not the, in any sport, really, I don't tend to take the approach that any young talented prospect on a losing team is going to be better than what you currently have. Because at some point, you do need to stack productive professionals. So you can't just continue to sort of kick that can down the road and say, all right, we'll move on from Eloy. We'll move on from Luis. We'll move on from Garrett. We'll move on from guys who have actually shown they can be productive. And then, you look at Luis Robert, maybe even elite-level production at the pro level. Garrett Crochet in the midst of elite-level production, an all-star season at the professional level. If you can continue to just say, we're not winning with them, so let's get rid of them and just acquire more prospects, then you just don't know. Like, we're just now coming out of the back end of having no idea what all those prospects would turn into. And now they've been with the Sox. They've been on the South Side for years now. And most of them haven't turned into a whole lot. So now you're trying to do what you can to move on from them and acquire more young talent. So a guy like Garrett Crochet, it would be unfortunate if at some point you lose him for nothing. But if you're in a position where you got Garrett Crochet, he goes out there every fifth day, continues to perform at a really high level, and then at some point you do have a guy who can become a cornerstone for when you're a winner. Or you end up doing what you did with Chris Sale.
Right.
Jose Quintana, he went elsewhere, stayed in the city, went elsewhere, and didn't do a whole lot with the Cubs. But Chris Sale continued to be amazing, goes and wins a championship for my wife's squad, for the Red Sox. But, you don't want to be in that position where you kind of have greatness in their prime and don't win with it.
Yep.
But you want good players, do you not?
It's true. It's hard to see the window opening when you're 26 and 66. That's what the White Sox are right now. They've lost 66 games this year. So you start you think about their window. It's like, and when they should be winning again, that's at least two, at least it feels to me like that's 2-3 years down the road. What if it's not even this regime? What if they don't do it? And I think that there's still so much angst from the last core, which was supposed to rise up, got to the playoffs, didn't win in the playoffs. It felt like you had something, and it's like, okay, we are eventually Eloy Jimenez, like the remnants of that. Yoan Moncada, who's still on the roster.
Right.
Will those
he's
guys
there somewhere
he's
doing
there.
Something.
They just seem like relics at this point. And we're talking about Tim Anderson.
Right.
And like, is his career over? Like just like you go through the Jose Abreu gone. Like that whole thing is just disappearing before our eyes, and the biggest pieces of it, like Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Dylan Cease, gone.
Right.
From the Sox, so it's this awkward metamorphosis that's happening right now.
Tanny, I am curious. I haven't heard your recent thought on where things sit with Garrett Crochet. I kind of went both ends of the spectrum there with the Crochet Kopech situation there. But I mean, are you in favor of them moving on from Crochet, or just think, all right, he's cost controlled, he's good, let's just keep him and hope for the best?
I think an organization should be able to build around that. I just don't know if that's where this organization is right now. There's just so much going on there. Like, I love watching him pitch. Every 5 days, those are the only games I'm really watching, just to see him and knowing that they'll likely lose most of those games that he starts. But, it's been awesome to watch him this year. But, I like seeing great players stay on their team, especially when they're the team that drafted them. Same for Luis Robert, the team that, signed him out of Cuba. Like, I want those guys to stay with the White Sox, but I just don't know if the timeline is going to work out here, And Crochet hasn't even done it for a full season. So to act like this is going to be a for sure thing, a known commodity for the rest of his career, like it was with Chris Sale, I don't know that for sure. So I can't really blame them for whichever road they decide to travel here with him. But I hope he stays, even though I know that that's probably not the best thing for their organization right now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair and measured way to look at it. It's very Tanny-esque way to
look at
the situation. That's
my brand.
Yeah.
Right.
Tanny-esque. That's what we're all looking for. But, hey, man, he's an all-star. Mm-hmm. It's a great story. If we're going to give the Sox some credit for something, it is to have seemingly successfully made Garrett Crochet into a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. Shota Imanaga is the Cubs' lone all-star. Coming up a little bit later on, we are going to talk Bears. We've got all sorts of good stuff that we've got mixing it up in terms of the Bears are concerned. And the off-the-charts expectations that exist for the Bears. We're going to get into that in a little bit. It's Big Ann Heron and me, Mark Grody, in for Parkins and Spiegel on the Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
I am actually doing a radio show with Parkins and Spiegel and I wasn't particularly good. I mean, not that that's a new thing.
Afternoons on the Score.
Hey, Chicago. What do you say? Cubs gonna win today.
Hey man, if the White Sox deserve credit for turning Garrett Crochet into a starter, the Cubs, their all-star, that's the White Sox all-star, the Cubs deserve credit for making sure they secured Shota Imanaga in this offseason, because the Cubs had a couple of, or have a couple of guys, as bad as this season has been for the Cubs, or just disappointing. I don't know how bad it's been as much as it's been disappointing. Around like 42-49. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that qualifies as bad.
Definitely not good.
But wholly disappointing. And I don't need to go through the bullet points on that. But they brought in Shota Imanaga, a guy who hit a two-run homer yesterday, then really clinched the victory, was Michael Bush, who's been a nice story. I don't know if Michael Bush is a cornerstone for the Cubs. I'm skeptical, to be honest with you, but I mean, how could you not say that Michael Bush has had a successful season this year? But Shota Imanaga is the Cubs' lone all-star this year. He earned it, especially with what he did earlier in the season, some of the ridiculous numbers, and it was and is guys like Shota Imanaga and Javier Saad and Ben Brown, as you mentioned earlier, who have kept this thing on the track, even though the track is still wobbly. It'd be a lot worse without Shota Imanaga on this team, who right now is 7-2 with a 3.16 ERA. So the ERA certainly starting to normalize, and you kind of want to keep it right there. He'll start at Baltimore tomorrow, but I mean, this has been, until further notice, this has been a success story for the Cubs, like a big success story.
And Showtime will be, if he continues on the current trajectory, he'll be one of the oldest NL Rookies of the Year. Not the oldest, but he'll be one of the oldest to win Rookie of the Year in the National League in the history of the sport. And, you know, when it was rumored the Cubs were looking at signing him, and then when the acquisition became official, certainly looked up some stats, looked at a few highlights. I didn't know, because I'd never watched him pitch live before this stretch, but I didn't realize just kind of what his vibe was on the field. He's just, his energy, his presence, his demeanor,
like
what he exudes. He is.
He's
an intense goof.
Yeah.
You know, like, he doesn't mind being goofy. He doesn't take himself too seriously. Doesn't take the environment. He's not overwhelmed by the environment. And when you're 30 and you come over to the States for the first time pitching, then you would hope maybe you're more prepared to be able to handle this stage.
Yeah.
But we've seen a few other guys who haven't shown up in Chicago and immediately handled this stage well, where there's been guys who've come over from Japan, guys who've already been here domestically, American-born players. But coming to pitch for the Chicago Cubs is an extremely big deal. And sometimes it's year two when a guy gets more comfortable with that, being on the north side here in the city and kind of taking off a little bit more. But yeah, you know, Showtime was ready from day one, man.
Yeah,
he's been incredible.
I will say this, like what you're saying about the personality. Mm-hmm. We are an easy audience here in the States. Yes. You know what I mean?
Like, and an easy odyssey. Like, the app is amazing.
We are an easy odyssey, that is for sure. But if you come from another country and like you start doing fun things and like adapting to our culture, we are like, oh, let's do the Starbucks stuff, and what's your Starbucks order, and singing Go Cubs Go. Like, I think it's kind of shrewd, actually, on the part of Shota Imanaga's people. All you got to do is this little song and dance for Cubs fans and everybody
over
in the media. You are protected personality wise. Now, okay, you're a fun guy who does neat things, and you did your best to sing Go Cubs Go. We are a very easy, like, I don't know if foreign ball players realize how little they have to do to impress us. You know what I mean? It's like juggling. Look at this.
Yeah.
I'm juggling. Yeah. Look at this. I'm singing Go Cubs Go. Mm-hmm. In that need, I'm like gesturing because of a home run. So, the personality part, I think that it's pretty smart on their part.
You think of like year one of Yu Darvish, and yeah, he was apparently kind of banged up in his first season, but it was really year two when he started to look like an elite level pitcher again. Craig Kimbrell, First season, super shaky. Oof. And then his second year, he looks like Craig Kimbrell.
He became tradable.
Again. Yeah. Oh, that's an asset yeah. somebody's going to want. All right, yeah. let's unload him. But, you know, we've seen just recent examples of guys who, when they first get to the north side, they yeah. first start performing in Wrigley. There is something to it. It's not like it's a hostile crowd, but for whatever reason, I feel like there's a number of recent examples of guys who year one doesn't go that smoothly. Then the second year, they take off. And Shota Imanaga has had no issues being here in Chicago.
Point.
He has handled it, and not just handled it looking comfortable, but with a brashness, with a bravado to him that I dig. Like, he's just enjoying it, doesn't seem overwhelmed by it in the least. Just coming over the water and being here in the States for the first time is something that I think would be daunting for most yes. of us. But for him, not only just coming here to the States for the first time, but pitching for the Chicago Cubs in a season with expectations right. where you're one of those guys who, yeah, maybe folks said that's not going to be our ace, but you're expected to contribute to winning. And not only has he done that, when you look at the whole scope of the season, he's been, for the whole first half so far, the best pitcher. Now, Justin Steele is back to looking like Justin
Steele.
He's
the best pitcher, yeah.
That's the ace again.
Yeah.
But as far as the whole first half of the year, there's a reason he's the all-star for the Cubs.
Well, and I think that it's so much, and Shota probably knew this too, that what is going to be the key part is managing him the rest of the season. There was already a skip. They've done it twice now where they skipped him in the rotation, right. one time somewhat controversially, and I think that another one, it just happened naturally. But that's the part that they have to manage. Can he continue at this pace that he has been at for the rest of the season and stay as good as he is? That I think, is the really hard part. So, like, that maybe it could have been predicted that he would have a hot start in the Cubs uniform. It's the rest of the way that I'm kind of worried about him. I think back to...
He still hasn't really even seen the same team. I think maybe one time he's faced an opponent
yeah,
a second
right.
time.
That's a great point, too.
So, yeah, that will be a part of the story of his second half.
He's
of
not
the
home
season.
Free yet, in other
right.
words. Like, he's
yeah.
still got some hurdles to jump over for the rest of this year and, quite frankly, next year. Like what... Hopefully he wasn't just a one-half phenom, and like, this is it. Like, he's got all the chances to prove it. He'll be the starting pitcher tomorrow. But I remember when John Lester first came to the Cubs in 2015, and first five or six starts that he had were not good. They were not good. Like, to your point about guys coming mm-hmm. and struggling for their first year or their first half of their first year
yeah.
and then figuring it out. So it could happen either way. I don't know which part for your psyche is probably more important, to have the fast start because if you just kind of spin out of control, then maybe you never get your traction again. So at least Shota Imanaga knows exactly what success feels like and how to get the success. I just hope he can maintain it for the rest of this season.
He claims he's still keeping some pitches in the bag. Like, oh, he's got some more he can throw at the opponents. I mean, if that's the case, and he's been this effective so early here, then I can't wait to see the rest of the bag of tricks.
Yeah, well, now the question will be when the All-Star game actually comes, there is going to be 100% of Cubs fans not wanting to see him pitching, unless the Cubs are so badly out of it by then.
Yeah, right.
Like, you must protect Shota Imanaga at that point. When we return, this brings us to our first Bears portion of the day.
Yeah.
Yes.
You and I have been here for over 2 hours, and we barely mentioned the Bears.
We have not.
We definitely haven't discussed
we
them.
We have a lot to talk about with the Bears, and one of the people who's regularly on this show, Danny Parkins of the Parkins and Spiegel Show, was talking about the Bears to a large audience, and he is part, what he said is part of what I want to talk about today in terms of expectations for the Chicago Bears. So we're going to do that next, coming up here on the Parkins and Spiegel Show with Big Ant Heron and Mark Grody on The Score.